listeners, you're listening to another episode of Beckett's Babies, a playwriting podcast. Every week we discuss plays we love, interview theater artists, and share our thoughts on playwriting and theater. We're your hosts, Sam Collier.
And Sarah Cho. And today we have a wonderful guest on the show. Her name is Pepper Chambers. She is an international writer, producer, and educator. She's a member of Circle X Emerging Playwrights Group, Moving Arts Mad Lab, and NTS Playwrights Lab. She uses her voice to scream, shout, or sing about women's issues, social justice, and love. She has been commissioned for LA's Lower Depth Theater Ensemble, and you can catch her radio play End of the Line about human trafficking in NTS Theater Company's The Zip Code Plays Season 2. Welcome, Pepper.
Ah, thank you. I'm
so glad to have you.
Thank you. This is awesome. So glad to be here with you guys. Thank you.
I should mention to our listeners that I know you through the Moving Arts Mad Lab.
Yeah.
We're in it together and we're in this year's cohort. Yes. So excited to have you. So we'd like to start the show with this question for all our guests is, tell us your earliest memory. What was your life like before theater?
Oh my God. Well, I don't, it's so funny. My parents are divorced, and I say this because I think that my earliest memories didn't really start until like until eight. And I'm so jealous of some people that have this. When I was three, I remember, because for some reason I don't have those. So one of the earliest ones, I know that I was like four because of where we were living. I was in, my parents drove my neighbor, who is also my blood sister, home. We get to the apartment and it's dark, it's late. And Gina is her name. Gina and I are asleep in the back seat. And I remember like we were fake sleeping, Gina and I, and my parents were like, okay, girls, you have to get up, time to get up. And we were like, you know, not moving. And then I remember my parents saying, okay, you guys could sleep in the bed in the car then, and getting out and closing the door. And that panic of like, no, no, don't leave us. And so I think that that's like an early one that I do remember.
Oh, they called your bluff.
Man, did they ever? And I'm like, why did that stick in my head? Was it the fear? Was it that, you know, was it that I don't know that they left me. I don't know. It was very interesting. So that's one of them.
That's one of the like delicious pleasures I remember from being a little kid is fake sleeping. I don't know why. But it was like, there's something really fun about like you're kind of lying, but you're not saying anything, right?
Exactly.
And like you get to hear how people behave when they think you're asleep. But like, honestly, now that I look back on it, I'm not sure actually my parents were ever fooled.
I know. Yeah. Never fooled. And the thing is like, was it the only thing we actually had control over? It's like, I pretend to sleep, you know?
Right.
I love it. So that was mine.
So then how did you make your way into the world of theater?
Oh, I think
from
that
the
was
early
it.
Performance.
Yeah, right. From my early performance in the backseat. I'm the oldest kid, and I was definitely, I do have that feeling of like being on stage, like people watching and me having to be good at things. But I'll say my first one was two things. In grade school, there was a production, something on stage. I just remember being on stage and we were singing, I've got spurs that jingle, jingle, jingle as I go riding merrily along. And they sing, you know, I don't remember what play that's or what musical that's from, but I remember being on stage singing that. And I was like, oh, this is awesome. I love it. And then fast forward to age 12, and this is after the divorce and everything. And my parents took us, my dad and my stepmom took us to a Renaissance fair in Wisconsin. I'm from Kenosha. And they bought us, my two brothers, these swords, and they bought me that flowery sort of wreath thing or headband thing. And I went home and wrote a play about a damsel in distress. And then my brothers had to rescue me. And then I made them rehearse and I gave them lines. And then we performed the play in the backyard under the apple tree. And I made programs and I made my parents watch us. And that I think was monumental for me.
Like, amazing.
Right. I loved it so much. I still remember it. I still like feel the energy of like being like, on stage in the backyard. So that's, I feel like those are my two main entries into theater. Yeah.
Oh. Did you ever take theater classes?
No. It wasn't, and I don't know why, honestly. We were more of an athlete family, sports. So, and dance, I was, you know, in school, I was doing those things. And I'm not sure, I never either like demanded or asked, but I didn't do that until I didn't take my first acting class until in my 20s, my mid-20s. Yeah.
Oh wow. So what made you want to take that first acting class?
Well, I wanted to be a singer. So it's a longer story, but after college, I worked in investments and I was not happy. And so I did that to please myself and my parents for about 6 years. And then finally I quit all of that. And in between there, I was dancing for the Chicago Bulls, and I became a Chicago Bulls dancer because there was this woman, Paula Abdul, and I was like, well, Paula Abdul is a Laker girl, so if I dance in the NBA, I will be famous too. So I followed that journey, and I'm singing, you know, trying to be the singer, and it's not working. And finally, after a while, I'm like, this isn't working, and a lot of people had said I should try acting. So that was when I finally took the first class, you know, and this was in New York. Now I'm really fast forwarding, but I moved to New York because of trying to be a singer. And when I put it all away is when I took my first class, and I studied with Susan Batson at, it was called Black Nexus back then. I think they've changed the name now. And no, I am so sorry, you guys, my first acting class with that was at HB Studios with Jean. I forgot her last name. And if I can keep talking about this story. So I walk in there, and it was a scene study class. And Jean, I was so methodical about it, like bringing in all the props and doing the stuff and studying. And I loved it so much, like that side of theater, like how you get to analyze things and research. And it was the best experience of my life. And luckily, she was the I know I did a good job, but luckily she's also the type of teacher that was encouraging. Mm. And I was thinking if that had been a bad experience, I would have walked away. You know, I'd been like, oh, that's not for me. Yeah. I'll try something else, you know? Yeah. But luckily she saw whatever she saw. And that's how I began. And then after that, getting as much as I could out of HB Studios, then I moved on to Susan Batson. And it was more intense, you know? But that's how I got started in New York. Yeah.
Wow. As soon as you said you dance for Chicago Bulls, my mouth just dropped. I'm like, what? That's like, isn't that really competitive? And like,
so much so. Yes.
Wow. It is. Incredible. Wow. Yeah. To jump, to go from there to where you are now. Like, that's, wow, that's an incredible journey.
Oh, gosh. Thank you.
Did you enjoy it? What was that experience like?
That's a good question, because it was, I could say it was a love-hate thing a little bit, because I know I was in my 20s at this time, and my confidence, I had a lot of confidence, but I also had triggers where I was not confident. So with dancing, and it was super competitive. I had to try out 3 times because I didn't make it the first time, the second time, and finally the third time. And this is over like 4 years. And thousands, like I was number 1,000 and something 1 year. Because it's also the year of the Michael Jordan era, you know, so it was seriously intense to be a part of this organization, and it was a huge goal. So making it was pinnacle, you know, but then once I got there, I realized I have a problem with perfection. And so when you're an artist, and I know all three of us know this, when you put perfection on your art, I think that can cause problems. So I would dance, and I'd be more concerned about, wait, where was I supposed to be? Was I supposed to be over there? Is my arm supposed to be up? You know, rather than trusting that I knew the choreography, and then performing, you know, like releasing the beauty that you have within you to do what you're there for, you know? And so then when you are not sure, then your coaches, your teachers, your mentors, whomever, they see that you're not. And then in this case, my coaches, they've got nervous sometimes. They're like, we can't trust her because we don't know if she's going to trust herself. And so that turned into me being cut from, like, you had to audition for, you had scheduled games that you got to perform in, but you also had to audition for that particular game to make sure that you match the choreography set for that particular game. And so a lot of times it would be my turn, my rotation for the to perform, and I would screw up the audition part and I wouldn't get to dance. And so that turned into this up down of like, oh my God, I suck, I'm awful. You know, all of that stuff. So that really messed with my head in terms of me not feeling like I was good enough, even though clearly I was, you know, and I say it like that.
So because, stressful.
Totally. Yeah. That makes me giggle. It was stressful. But also I say it as a conversation between us as performers and women, because I do that to myself a lot. I've gotten better now, but it's, we can really sabotage ourselves by getting into that cycle.
Oh yeah.
You know, and it takes a long time to get out of it. But man, it was beautiful. The last game was, it was the last game that they won at home with Michael Jordan, and it was Father's Day. And so I was able to bring my dad down into the locker room, and my dad played ball too in college. And so it was just the greatest gift in terms of like, man, you know, for him to be around all those greats and, you know, like that kind of stuff. It was wonderful, but it was stressful. But at this stage of my life, I know it was a fantastic learning experience. It really catapulted me to what the things that came next. So, yeah.
So as former NBA dancer to investment to actor, like, so how did this all translate to writing for you? Like, is there anything you pulled from that?
Yes. Well, after I started studying acting, I was in some terrible plays. And I thought in one of them, I was like, oh my God, like if this person can do this, certainly I can. Right. And I know you've all been there. I know it. So I was like, and in my acting class, I was studying Billie Holiday. I love the 40s and stuff. And so I was studying Billie Holiday and looking at who was she without the gardenia, because, you know, you do all this research and she's this, she's that, she's a prostitute, but then you read her book and she says she's not a prostitute, or she wasn't, you know. So I wrote a play called House Rules, and I have Billie Holiday go into this bar in rural America, somewhere in the South, and the rule, one of the house rules is who you are out there, nobody cares in here. And so I stripped her of all the things that we're supposed to know about her. And then you get to know like who she could have been or who she was or so on. So that was my first, I feel like that was my first like real play. And that started in New York. And then, I forgot what year I started it, but my friend and I self-produced it in LA in 2009. Like it was, yeah. So it took a good like 6-7 years for it to come to life. But that, I'll say that was my, I put my pin in that one. It's like my first getting into it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. We had a other guest a while back who like his moment when he decided to start writing plays was he was in an audition. He was an actor. And he said to the director, he was like, this play is so bad, I couldn't write a play. She was like, first of all, don't say that in an audition. And second of all, I want to see your play. You
know? Like, I love it. Yeah, oh, that's so great. Good. Exactly. So, you know, it's inspiration.
Yeah.
It's another form of inspiration. Cool.
So, in the process of writing and, what are some things you learned the way, like some, like your own processes or, strategies, like what did you start to notice about your development?
Ooh, that is a good question. And I think just to bring it recent, since the thing that the program that Sarah and I are in, okay, so part of it, so I bring up the play that I'm working on in that, and it's called Unexplained Infertility. And this play is, it's about partly about my fertility journey, infertility journey, but also my journey with being in a verbally abusive relationship. And so those two things are, of course, are incredibly emotionally hard. And so in part of my process, so I'm one of my gifts that I consider a gift is that I'm really good at writing about pain, and I'm good with somehow people feel that they are with me in it, you know? Mm. And so I just poured everything on the page. And actually, I'm getting confused. I was writing two plays at the same time. This play, Unexplained, is not the one I did with Sarah. We're working on something else. But I will continue with what I'm talking about. So I was like, wait, I'm getting it mixed up. So in Unexplained Infertility, all those things, my guts are like on the page. And then I'm realizing as it goes through, you know, like the women, the actors are with me, they're feeling the pain and all this stuff. And then at one point someone's like, Pepper, this is painful. You know, like it's too painful. Like, and so what the part of my process I learned is that, okay, I can get all the stuff out and then go back and find more of the story and the nuances and all of that stuff. And also to let go. I know that that's something all of us, you know, you have to let go as an artist, let go of words, let go of scenes. And I've just learned that the fun part or the exciting part or the chilling part is that let go phase is going to come. You know, yeah. Like I look forward to knowing that I have the freedom to do that, even though I don't have to do it right then. Does that make sense?
So, yeah. And so I'm curious to know, like, what are some of the changes you've made to kind of mitigate that pain in the play?
Yeah. One friend who's close to me, he listened to a reading and he said, it's like, Pepper, I kind of hear you. He didn't know my story, but he's like, I hear you in there, and we need to love this woman. We need to see how wonderful she is. And I realized that, I wasn't letting her shine, you know? And so I had to go back and just start over. And my mentor in, this is all Circle X. So my mentor in Circle X, her name is Megan Brown. And I think obviously, sorry, like you don't know her, I think. And so Megan said, give yourself the permission to either number one, write out of order, just write something new that you don't think you may or may not use. And those basically those two things, write out of order and just get it out, you know, just write something new. Mm-hmm. So I, in taking that note of make us love her, I started working on this morning actually, and I just started writing her joy. Like I put her in a joyful moment and I surrounded her with joyful things that make the character happy. And then I'm going to see how I can use that to weave her, you know, to bring her in, to literally bring her in. You know, she was kind of oppressed because of circumstances. And I was like, well, of course everyone can see how lovely she is, but no, they weren't able to see. Yeah. And, you know, and going on that, I don't know if you guys, how you guys write, but when I am writing these moments, especially when they're related to me, I notice a trend where I'm subconsciously sometimes not giving myself a voice, like giving that character a voice. And I'm realizing, cause that's how I sort of feel in life sometimes. Uh-huh. So
like,
I think,
yeah, you're recreating something you feel.
Yes.
But then when other people see that, it might actually help to tell the story better if you share some of what you would say.
Exactly. And in taking that note, I've also gotten much better taking notes. I realize, you know, you just get to turn. You get to turn to the right or to the left or look up or look down. No, like I would rather look up. You get to look up and see something else, you know, rather than what's been right in front of you, literally on the screen. And, you know, and then see more. yeah, you just, you can see more.
This is why I think like writing plays is just one of the most powerful and I guess empowering, and that's the word I'm looking for, art forms. And I see this with my students, like especially high school students, when they're given a chance to write about something they've experienced. And then yeah. there's that moment where they can change the story. You know, it's like yes. they're creating a character that's based on them, and maybe the family is based on their family mm. or yeah. like, you yeah. know, some like oppressive teacher or something. But then there's that moment when they get to speak back in a way that they haven't done in real life. And it's just
yeah.
so empowering and magical.
It is. Oh, I
because
love
they're able
so
to
much.
Say something that they haven't been able to say for whatever reason.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, gorgeous. Yeah. Makes me happy. It's a beautiful thing. It's such a gift to do this work, you know?
Yeah.
And what you said with your students and be able to introduce it to people. And I just love it. Love it.
Hmm. Mm. So just to shift gears a little bit, how has the pandemic change the way you think about theater? Just recently I talked about this, but I saw this play at Geffen Playhouse. It's called Someone Else's House, and they really utilize multimedia in a way that I never thought would be possible. But during this time, during this, you know, we're stuck inside, but things are reopening, but like what do you think like has changed during the pandemic, or what do you hope to change because of the pandemic for the theater, for the future of theater, I guess.
Oh man, you know, the pandemic was super changing, life changing for me in that regard, because I hadn't been writing plays at all, honestly, guys. Like I had stopped because I was tired of. My model was I would write something and I would produce it. And I did that for years and years and years, and it's exhausting. And it was, it was expensive, you know, like I was hand to mouth. It's like that's hand mouth foot disease, whatever. I was hand to mouth all the time and putting in all of my money into my art. And it just was exhausting and not always fulfilling. So I say that in the terms of, so I stopped creating theater and just directing or being behind the scenes and so on. And then I was writing fiction. I write fiction as well. So when pandemic hit, Laura Death was doing the pandemic plays. And so I submitted to it and I wrote a play about this woman character, an older woman with a younger man. I wanted to spin the thought. And that was so freeing. You know, and it brought me back to writing, and that catalyst turned, I think, into where I am now. Like I took a chance and I submitted to things. And you know, and kind of like the Lovables, the dancing thing, I had just sort of given up because I haven't been told 50 million times because I haven't asked 50 million times, but I've been told enough no's that I was like, oh God, like I hate that process. So I found the courage to apply to things. And let's be honest, this whole, I'll continue with my thought. Part of me thinks that I got a lot of the opportunities this year because I am a Black woman and, you know, and because people were like, okay, we're opening the doors and we're looking at people. Now there's that one side, and I want to interrupt myself and say this story. So I went to Marquette University in Milwaukee, which is mostly, mostly all white, just not very diverse. But I wanted to go to Howard, which is an HBC, historically Black college. So I wanted to go to there. And I was having a conversation with my mom and my stepmom. I'm sorry, with my stepmom and her friend. They're from Mississippi. They're Black. And that friend had said, I excelled at Marquette quite a bit. I still have my track record there. I was the senior speaker. Like I did a lot and I excelled a lot and I was awarded a lot. And we were having a conversation and she's like, well, if Pepper had gone to Howard, would she have not excelled because she wouldn't have stood out so much. Like she would have been like everyone else, you know? And I found it super insulting, but it was super intriguing. And so that stayed with me because it also takes away it takes away who I am.
Right.
I am a go-getter. I am a person who excels and I am talented. I know that. So in this moment, this pandemic moment where people are listening to our voices of color, I'm like, well, I know my voice is great. I know it is. Thank God I can say that finally. Like, I know it's good. So, but was I chosen because my voice is good or because I'm a Black woman or because of both? Mm-hmm. And so, but I bring it up in this conversation, but I'm also not purposefully dwelling on it because number one, I don't want to. And number two, I'm like, if the freaking door is open, I'm walking in.
Yeah. You know, like, totally. And like, I mean, it's just so hard. It's just so unfair that you have to think about it that way because like straight white never spend time thinking like, did I get this opportunity because I'm a exactly. white man, although they should be thinking, because like probably the answer is yes. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Right? You know?
Yeah.
And so that's how pandemic changed for me. And it was, man, I have gotten so many opportunities, but I tried. You can't get anything right. if you don't try, for God's sakes. So I finally, you know, so, and I think I tried because I knew that people were open and they were listening on that's the truth for me. I'm like, well, maybe now, like maybe someone will actually, you know, do something. So anyway, that is how this experience has been. And because I was more confined, to not doing 50 million other things, mm-hmm. I was able to bring my brain in and focus just a bit on something that I've always, since that play in the backyard, have loved. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
during this pandemic year, have you discovered mm-hmm. any other new artists recently that you're really excited about or?
Oh my gosh. One person is sitting right here. Like,
Sarah Cho.
And I'm being super duper honest. And Sarah, like this, she and I have this email exchange because, you know, I haven't been around a lot of writers. I haven't been around a lot of writers who are, you know, brown like me. And it's like, I kind of forgot exactly what the question was, but I'm just going to continue. So this feeling, oh yeah, being exposed. So I was been exposed to so many writers this year, just in my circle, you know, not even going out and reading people I don't know, but reading the people who I've been introduced to through these emerging playwrights groups. And it makes me emotional. Like, it has been so wonderful to listen to people and be inspired by them. And with Sarah and I, we were, if it's okay, Sarah, I can talk about it. I messaged her and I said, man, like for once in our lives, my life, I get to write a play with all Black characters instead of having to put in the one white person or the one this or the one that. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, dude, like you know, and Sarah, I don't know, I forget like if you had done it before, but it was this freedom. And it's not because someone said, oh, Pepper, go write all Black play. I just was like, I don't care anymore. Like, I just, and because of that, and Sarah and I got a moment to bond over that just a bit of, that, you know?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that's the answer, is like, this is the people in my neighborhood, you know? Yeah. It's just been awesome. Awesome.
Yeah. When you emailed me and like, it was such a nice feeling of recognition of like, because I've too, you know, I feel like I've been like writing and I just feel like I don't know why, but it's just been really difficult to just like find people who like get you. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And so to like, yeah, and to hear plays out loud and with people that understand you and like coming from you, it's been incredible. Like, almost, it's just been life changing for me to be like, why was I so accommodating for other people? Like, to follow their rules or like to play by them or their game, or like, I just felt like I've been doing that for so long to accommodate others, never allowing myself to just embrace, like step in, like what you're just saying, like, you know what, F this, like I'm going in, I'm stepping through that door. So
Well, because I feel like they said you had to, you know, and like they one did. Of the things that the pandemic has made clear is that so many of our assumptions about theater were just false. Like there's so much that was just based on lies. And now the scales have fallen from our eyes and like we really can't ever go back because now we know that a lot of that was just false to begin with.
Yeah.
And speaking of, well, two things. Did you guys see the film 40-year-old version? Did you
see
it?
Not yet. I really want to. Was it amazing?
It was really good. I enjoyed it a lot. So the themes come up in that film. Okay, so that's that. So watch it if you can. And then the other thing is that, okay, so, right, like, there's no going back, but like, are we still in a position of power? Yes, the conversation I believe will continue and that's never going to stop, thank God. And then, but will the people in power still go back to the model because it has made money? You know, this is what I'm super curious about. I think it's changing and I don't think it's going to not stop changing. Mm. Yeah, I said it right. I think it will continue to change. But will it continue to change in the way that we're all championing and have been? I don't know. What do you guys think?
That's a real head scratcher for me. As things are like reopening and things are, there is this like, oh, there's this feeling of like, I want to go back to everything the way it is, you know?
Yeah.
Or this like attitude. There's some people kind of like, but then at the same time, I feel like there's this tension of like, yes, but we need to progress. We need to like, we can't go back to the way things were. And so I know it's with that tension, it makes me think that there will be progress, but maybe it'll be slow, but I'm just hoping in like what Sam said is like, you know, the scales have fallen off. Like it's like people, I think the awareness is there now of like,
agreed.
Yeah.
But Sam, what do you think?
Well, I feel very conflicted. Like I want to be optimistic and say like we can only move forward now. But I do think even as I say that there's a real desire among some people and some institutions to you know, to return to the way things were before the pandemic.
Yeah.
So I think it, you know, maybe we have to fight against that impulse.
And maybe it will be tiered. I'm thinking, you know, maybe the Broadway's maybe not so much there yet because they're so ingrained. You know, I'm thinking like the layers of systemic stuff, like it's going to tackle that. Well, crap, like I'm trying not to swear. Like maybe, you know, sometimes maybe it's just, I was going to say maybe it'll take time to peel back the stuff. But some of it is like, no, if you just take a hammer and break everything, then you just go, you know. So that's why I stopped myself. I'm like, well, no, it doesn't have to be that way. But the other point I was going to make is maybe it will be tiered if the powers that be at each of these levels, if we have more power at level B, you know, and you know what I'm saying? Like if
it will, it'll like instead of trickle up, it will trickle. I mean, instead of trickle down, it will trickle up. Like the changes will.
Yeah. Yeah. Something like that. Or maybe it goes back to the reason I self-produced is because I could tell my stories and I didn't need anyone else, except for literally like another friend or someone to help me produce. I didn't care about the rest of the engine. And so maybe we not go back to that, but maybe more people will do that again. I'm talking in circles just a little bit. Like, I don't want to go back to self-producing. You know, I shouldn't have to self-produce just to get my story told.
It's so exhausting.
It's exhausting. And I don't think it's fair. It's liberating.
Right, I agree. It's not fair. That some people, you know, that it does feel like there's just really different systems in place for different kinds of people.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. And so then on the positive side, so then if it's like, yeah, the trickle up, like, okay, here and here and here, and we just keep pushing and hammering and, you know, and make these changes. It'll be interesting. I had an interview with someone. There's a company in New York that does the marketing for Broadway shows. Mm-hmm. And in the interview, I said, in all transparency, I'm curious about how, you know, how you're handling speaking to people of color and all that kind of stuff. I'm 50 years old, by the way. I never would have said that before. And this pandemic year and our, you know, this past year and a half, I've stepped into that part of myself where I'm like, I'm going to speak up. I'm going to be nervous about it sometimes, but I'm going to speak up. And in this moment, she's like, I appreciate that you said that because we've been talking about it too. Mm. And that was super, and this is what I mean in the tears. So this is the marketing side. Right. So if the marketing side for theater can make some changes, that's definitely a place that we can include and or start, you know?
Yeah.
So, and that was my Joan of Arc, like that was my flag. I'm like, well, if on this phone call with her, if I can say something here, then that's something, you know,
right.
To keep making change. So that's how I'm challenging myself anyway.
Wow.
And you know.
Yeah. So I'm hoping that like what I would love to see is that maybe it'll be a telling moment that like, oh, things are changing, is maybe when people stop creating GoFundMe pages for their projects. Please donate to me. Like, and I mean, like, it's just like, oh, it's exhausting. Even as a person, but okay. So before we move on to Glisten, we have a couple more questions for you.
Okay.
So what? I'm just like, after listening to just your whole life, pretty much. I'm just trying to figure out, like, what advice would you give to playwrights who are in, you know, in this position of like, I want to make this change in my life, mm-hmm. but I'm afraid to, or like I can't, or like what advice would you give to those people who are in between or making those big moves?
Oh gosh. Can I ask you another question? When we say like a big move, what kind do we think that is? Because that's important at this stage.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess the big move, it's like, it just changing your course. Like maybe you're on a certain path of like, oh, I thought I was trained. I was, you know, made to think this way, and now I just want to change that. Like, I'm trying to think of my own life. like, you know, like for almost like 3-4 years, I was in publicity, entertainment publicity, PR, thinking like, I guess this is it. I'm stuck here, you know,
totally.
Until I had this like realizing like, I don't have to be here. Like, I don't need to do this. And I just started like looking elsewhere. But that realization, it took a while for me to realize that.
Because
I was kind of like just dependent on that thinking, or like that thinking in that position. So, yeah.
Yeah. I love that. Okay. Thank you. So I think that, okay, I'm going to go at it from a core value something. So I think that the advice is that we have as people, you know, we have to get out of the thinking that about status quo. We have to get out of the status quo sort of way of life. So I worked in investments because I couldn't get a job after graduating. I was an advertising major. I'm going to go back even further. When I went into college, I was a business administration major. Why? Because my dad said I need to do that so I can get a job. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, I ran track and I was in a class, a night class in a stats, some stupid math class, okay? And it was nighttime. I'm like, I hate this. I started crying. I'm like, I don't want to do this. Mm-hmm. So I finally had to stop doing what I didn't want to do, speak up for myself, and change my major to advertising. So I go into advertising, big win for me, yay. And then I get out of college and I can't get a job. Now, I'm like, oh, I'm going to open the door. Who cares? So I'm like, why can't I get a job? So then my dad's, so we had a little nepotism, right? My dad's friend from college hired me at his company. And that's how I got a job. And oh, wow. Number two, and then I stayed in investments for 6 years because I would, that's what I'm supposed to do. That's what I was supposed to do. Now, everything I learned there has helped me. I learned how to manage money. I learned a lot peripherally, but I did it because I was supposed to. So, you know, we have, if we, the core thing I'm trying to get at is if we keep doing what we're supposed to, oftentimes we won't get to what we want to do. And I do believe that if you get to your passion and what you want to do, I do think that things fall in place. Now, there's the part of money, there's a part of eating, there's a part of paying rent, there's a part of quality of life.
Right.
And those things are very real. And so sometimes what we want to do doesn't feed us. But if we can find a way to keep pushing, then I believe in the things like, you know, the universe and higher power and whatever. I do think that things fall into place if you're able, and I mean able in terms of even that turns into privilege and those other things. Like Sarah, I'm married too. I got married and congratulations. You're welcome. We eloped in December. And,
oh, cool.
Yeah, it was fun. We were supposed to do, November, do the whole big thing, but our COVID change just turned us into eloping in Santa Barbara, and it was awesome. Mm-hmm. And
well, congratulations.
Thank you so much. It's been awesome. I'm really happy. But I will say that partnership has given me a lot of freedom that I did not have before. And I say this to be transparent and I say it to be open and all of that. So, and my friend Tina and I, we talk about it a lot because we look at like, who's the brand, Chanel, Coco Chanel. And we talk about her and some other women and, you know, they marry these husbands that have a crap ton of money. And then you see they flourish. And we're like, dude, do we have to be partnered with someone with money in order to do what we need to do? Like, is that for, and she's like, is that for real? For real? Like, is this a real thing? And I'm still curious about it, honestly. Now, partnership doesn't have to be romantic. It doesn't have to be married, but it could be producers. I've done no show without another producer. And usually it's a friend, you know, another woman friend that we're like, dude, let's do this. Mm. You know, like a partnership is, I don't know, a grant. I don't know. Like we're,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so I think that in order, and to bringing it back to the question, in order to not do what you're supposed to do, you have to find the way to do what you want. Like, I feel like the supposed to is almost easier because everything is there to make you do it.
Yeah.
And if you
want
to,
it kind of feels like the supposed to is kind of looking backwards, like what has worked in the past, right?
Yes.
Or
people
are giving you advice about that, like might have been relevant 20 years ago.
Whereas
what you want is looking forward. And so,
absolutely.
And nothing is going to change. Like you're not going to grow if you're looking backwards. And opportunities are not going to grow for you. And the world is not going to change if you're looking backwards.
And sometimes, yes. And sometimes that's leaving friends behind, leaving family behind, leaving beliefs behind so that you can look forward. And that really is the advice is to look forward, you know, and to do what you want. And it comes with freaking sacrifice.
Yeah.
You know? People don't get to come to our weddings. How many weddings did I miss because I couldn't afford to go anywhere? Mm. That kind of stuff. But you still have to keep, you just, the advice is to keep looking forward. I love that you said that, Sam, like, or, you know, keep looking forward and find your way to it. Mm-hmm. And it's not easy. Like, it ain't easy.
Yeah.
All three of us know that. But I think that's how I really do. I think that it's like, oh, let me take a chance here. Let me do something different here. Let me ask somebody that I wouldn't have asked something of before, you know?
Yeah, totally.
That's what I believe. Well,
Pepper, here's a fun question to change things up before we wrap up. No, I mean, this is more like a game question. This is like just for kicks.
Okay, for kicks.
So if you were going to have a dinner party with three playwrights, living or dead, you can invite anybody you want. Who would you pick?
Oh, my God. Dinner party. Okay. Well, I want to invite Lorraine Hansberry because I realized she died so early.
Yeah.
And I would love for her. Do I invite her as a ghost or do I invite her from before? That's the major thing. I think I would like to invite the ghost so that we could see what happened and all of that. So, okay. So Lorraine would be one.
Cool.
Okay. Who else? This is really strange. Okay. So Lanford Wilson, do you guys know Lanford Wilson?
Oh yeah.
Okay. So Lanford was introduced to me in one of my theater classes and I was like, who is this guy? And do you guys know that for the longest, I thought he was black because he's not and I thought, oh, the teacher's giving me this guy because he's black. And then just recently I looked him up. I'm like, this guy isn't black.
I thought that too when I first read a play by him or something. I don't know why either.
And maybe he was just writing about black people. I don't know. So I would invite him because I would like to be, I'm curious now about his voice. You know, like what was going on? Mm-hmm. Or not so much like what was going on, but what was affecting you, you know, to write these stories. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then, oh my gosh, now this other one better be good. So I feel like it should
be
pressure. Someone.
Don't put pressure on yourself.
I know. Hold on. And the thing is that I don't read a whole lot of plays. And so I'm judging myself because I can't be like, oh, so-and-so. So I'm going to choose Sarah. And Sarah's going to be there. And
nice.
We're going to have a lovely, lovely time.
That's fantastic.
Right?
Oh,
that's awesome. I like that dinner party.
I love it. I'm so happy to be invited. I was just thinking, I think I thought too Lanford Wilson was black, but now I'm thinking, do you think people were getting confused with him with August Wilson?
I don't know.
Oh, maybe. Well,
maybe, but I was introduced before I knew about August Wilson.
Oh,
so
okay.
Yeah, and it's crazy. And Sam, maybe can you come too?
I'll just show up.
Just
yeah, show eating, and I'll be like, here I am.
Okay, if this was a potluck, I would bring pie. I would bring pie.
Ooh, but what kind? What kind?
Okay. I would bring. You know, I'm only because I just made this yesterday.
Yes.
It would be like peaches and cream pie.
Oh my gosh.
Just like
yum.
Not what I expected to be, but I was like, this is really good. It's kind of custardy. The peaches would be in season because it's summertime. So I'm hoping your dinner is during the summer. Okay.
Yes. For you, yes.
Thank you.
That sounds lovely.
That does
nice.
Sound lovely.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay. So, okay, Pepper. So where can our listeners find you?
Ooh, okay. So your listeners can find me on my blog, which is where I love people to read my words. So they can go to penandpepper.com. And Pepper is P-E-P-P-U-R. So P-E-N-A-N-D, pepper.com. And all of my socials are Pepper the Hot One.
Yes.
It's so fun. A friend gave me that years. He's like, you're the hot one. I am. And you know what? And I finally stepped into it. I'm like, I am the hot one. I am. And So then I put it on all my stuff. So
amazing.
Yeah, and my email is even Pepper at Hotmail. Like, that's how long I've had it. But I'm like, how freaking lucky am I to have Pepper at Hotmail.com?
The one of Hotmail.
Yeah, never let that go.
I can never let it go. So those are the places that people can find me. And I do have a women's brand, if I can say it. So I did start a dinner theater show when I got to LA in 2004, based on what we just talked about. I did want to be a singer, and I had all these songs, and I wanted to be a pussycat doll, and I wasn't. And so I created a burlesque dinner theater show called Harlem's Night, performed by the Brown Bettys. Yeah. And so I trademarked the Brown Bettys name, and over this, you know, it's become my life's work, and it's a women's empowerment lifestyle brand now. So brownbettys.com, and that's BRWNBETTIES. So Brown Bettys, and that's my other, the other part of my life and where I empower women and, and speak to us and do things.
Awesome. And we'll make sure to link those in our show notes.
Mm-hmm. That's nice. Thank you.
Check it out.
Thank you.
All right. So this is Glistens. It's our part of the show where we just talk about what caught our attention during the week. It could be a headline, a new music you found, or new artist. I'll start first. Okay. And, I have really gone into Sudoku. I'm not into word search or crossword puzzles, ironically, even though I'm like, oh, I write, but like, I just don't like those. Then Sudoku, I got into it, and I'm like, wow, it discovered this thing in me where I just love logic for some reason. Like, I hate math, but I love algebra.
Yes. Oh my God.
So it's like, oh, if it's kind of this like element in me, I'm like, oh, I love it. And I was like researching a little bit, like, how did this game come about? And like, I learned that it was actually modernized by this American architect named Howard Garnes in 1979. Oh. But then Japan basically like just took off in Japan. And I think the name, it's like, let me see. It's like, it's called, I'm going to try to pronounce this, but like Suji wa Dokushinni Kagiru. And so like it's an abbreviation, became Sudoku, and then Japan trademarked it. I just thought that was like a funny, like,
it's
this like, it's like modernized by like an American architect, but then like popularized by Japan. I thought that was like interesting, funny, now I'm obsessed with this game and I just can't stop.
Do you do like the really, really big ones?
Really big ones? What do you mean?
Yeah, there are ones, because I think the standard one is 3x3 boxes, but then there are some that are like huge.
Yeah, I'm still a beginner. So yeah, 3x3 for me right now until I progress and get better at it. Yeah. But it's just so fun because I've been like trying to find something to do when you're at an airport or something, you know, like, yeah, I need that one thing that's like more than just reading or like on your phone, you know, like I need that one thing. And like, I'm so happy to discover.
It's Sudoku. Kind of soothing.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
Oh, good for you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So that's my glisten.
Okay.
Well, my glisten is I went to this farm dinner the other night at my favorite farm here in Maine, Toddy Pond Farm. I'm going to miss it so much. And it was so nice. They had live music. And you could walk around and see the animals. So I saw these little piglets.
Oh,
really cute. And then ate amazing food, and it was just, they had to cancel all their dinners last year because of COVID, and it was just so nice that it's all starting up again.
Oh, I love that. And just, are you moving, Sam?
I am moving to Boulder, Colorado in 2 weeks. Yeah.
Good for you. Change is coming.
I know. Big change. Yeah.
Oh my God, man. Okay. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's nice. You're welcome.
Exciting.
So what's your glisten?
Okay, my glisten happened right before this. I got very lucky. I was going to say my glisten was actually cleaning the kitchen. We moved a month ago to Phoenix, and we have a house, and I have never had to do so much cleaning in my life. And so when I got the kitchen cleaned, I was really happy. But even more on brand for us right now, sadly, my husband's father passed away last year, July, and he walked in here this morning, and he's like, and he gave me this box of pens. Okay, so I want to describe it to you. So his dad smokes cigars, so it's literally in a wood cigar box, and it smells like tobacco and minty tobacco. But I'm gonna make a sound effect for you. Can you hear this? Oh, probably not because of headphones. Can you hear all these pens?
Yeah.
Oh my god, I am literally holding on to like 40 colorful gel pens of the rainbow. So like 6 different greens and pinks and golds and everything. And they're the gel writer pens. Oh, so his dad was an artist, and he painted these beautiful, beautiful, vibrantly colored paintings of sports and landscapes and stuff. And so Matt walked in, and he's like, here's my dad's pens. And I'm like, oh, my God.
Oh, wow.
So there's a huge glisten because they're pens and pen and pepper. And I love, love it. Like, sometimes I can't even work because I can't find the right pen. So this is a gorgeous glisten for today that I will share with you guys.
What's your favorite color of the pens in front of you?
I mean, magenta family is my favorite, and these they must have numbers that I can't see. So the magenta family, we'll just leave it at that.
I love it.
Oh, I love
the magenta family. That sounds like the name of a play.
Magenta family. I'm gonna write it down. Good idea, magenta family. So that is my glisten for today.
Awesome. Oh, thank you so much, Pepper, for coming onto our show.
Oh, man. This is great. Thank you. And it's, you know, it's funny, these things, because they end up, if you're lucky, they light your own fire. You know, you get excited and you remember why you do what you do. Mm. And you get excited and you remind yourself that, man, I got to go and make a phone call that I don't want to make. Or, you know what I mean? Like the look forward part, that stuff. It reminds you, like, yeah, man, go do it. And then to share space with you guys and to support you and you know, having this endeavor and it's not easy to do podcasts. It takes a lot of work. And I just appreciate you guys asking me to be part of it. And I wish you the best. Aww. And just keep going.
Aww,
you got
thank
this.
You. You're welcome. We appreciate you.
Thanks.
For having this inspiring conversation with us.
Yeah.
I love it. This is important. This stuff is important in life. So thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Beckett's Babies. If you enjoyed what you heard or learned a thing or two about playwriting, be sure to like, subscribe, and share the podcast with your friends.
And if you'd like to reach out and share with us your thoughts on playwriting and theater, or maybe be a guest on the show, be sure to visit our website at www.beckettsbabies.com. That's www.beckettsbabies.com, and you can contact us there. Thanks for listening.